Chief Judge Elrod, and may it please the court. Katie Shepard for Mr. Lopez. There are two issues in this case, both about the guidelines calculations. First, there's the pattern enhancement, and second, there's the five-level distribution enhancement. For the pattern enhancement, the parties are in agreement that the district court plainly erred based on the present record. The guidelines definition excludes touching through clothing, and the Texas statute for indecency with a child includes that conduct. And the government didn't produce any evidence in this case about Mr. Lopez's conduct, so it could have been touching through clothing.
Ms. Shepard, if we agree with the parties that the pattern enhancement was incorrect, as has been conceded, do we automatically need to remand for resentencing if the correct sentence would be in the range in which the person was sentenced? Or I understand it was at the low end, and now that there's still like a 20-month differential between the low end of the new range. So can you answer that question?
Yes. Even though the sentence of 360 months is within the range of 324 to 405, the court would still need to remand for resentencing because under Molina Martinez and Rosales Morales, the third and fourth prong in this case are met. When the district court didn't say much about why it was imposing the sentence and imposed the sentence that corresponded precisely to the low end of that incorrect higher range. And that is a situation where this court has remanded on the third prong because there is an effect on substantial rights in that situation.
Because he could get 320 months instead of 360 months.
Is that basically the
calculation and your colleague is kind of nodding to? So I think that's okay.
So there's an effect on substantial rights even in that situation. Yeah. And there are cases from this court that say that. And then also on the fourth prong, there's the risk of unnecessary deprivation of liberty because of that difference in the guidelines there.
So if we were to agree with you to remand, would we authorize the district court to hear additional evidence on remand?
No, we would ask the court to remand for resentencing under the lower guidelines range. The government hasn't offered any special circumstances as to why there should be an exception to the general rule from Chemical and Metal that the remand is with the present record. In this case, there wasn't any dispute that the government bore the burden to prove the enhancement. The government wasn't prevented from presenting evidence in any way by the district court, and the government hasn't offered a good reason as to why it didn't offer the evidence. The probation office and the government both tried to get the offense reports in this case, but weren't able to do so. The prior conviction is 19 years old at this point, and there was some sort of record-keeping change. So under Chemical and Metal, the government shouldn't be given a second chance to try to produce the evidence, and the court should remand for resentencing under the lower range.
Okay. Can we address the other enhancement?
Absolutely. For the distribution enhancement, there is no dispute that Mr. Lopez should receive the two-level enhancement for knowingly distributing child pornography, but the district court erred by applying the five-level enhancement under the text of the guidelines and its commentary, as well as this court's decisions in Halverson and Placido. The guideline was amended in 2016, and it now requires a quid pro quo agreement that the defendant distributed in exchange for valuable consideration from another person.
Was there a quid pro quo agreement here? Because the PSR says that he joined chat rooms that require you to send child pornography to receive child pornography. Are the chat rooms in the same factual basis, the same ones as in the PSR, which have that quid pro quo built into the chat room that he participated in?
There isn't a direct agreement in this case. There's not a specific agreement between people like there was in the Fusito case, where the defendant messaged the undercover agent and set up an implicit agreement to exchange.
But it can be an implied agreement, right?
There could be implied agreement, but it does have to be a specific agreement between, like, a person-to-person agreement.
Person-to-person or person-to-people?
It could be multiple people, but we just don't have evidence of a specific agreement in this case. And the chat room evidence that we do have is similar to the file sharing that we had in the peer-to-peer file sharing that was in Halverson, where this court held that the evidence was insufficient. There, the defendant had made child pornography images available on this peer-to-peer file sharing website or network application. An undercover agent was able to download complete files from that person, and the person, Halverson, got an advantage by doing that. He got a benefit by sharing files in his own request for downloads. He got preferential access and increased speeds. So he got a benefit from sharing these files with this undercover agent. What was missing in that case was an agreement with the agent.
Well, I thought Halverson has something more specific. I thought in Halverson, the special agent expressly stated that he had not sought any child pornography in return for the materials that had been given to the agent. So in that case, there was a specific disclaimer of quid pro quo, whereas in this case, it could be an implied agreement to do quid pro quo via the Facebook Messenger, all of that.
There was the agents testified that Halverson hadn't sought anything from the agent in return for sharing. So the Halverson did get a benefit from sharing because he got this preferential access and increased speeds, but he didn't ask for anything specific from that agent. And in this case, the chat rooms are also this generalized, you join, the purpose is to send and receive, but there isn't any evidence of a specific request between two people. Again, it could be implied, but there isn't, and again, in like the Facito case, that ended up being an implied agreement. And then also the Jones case that the government cites in its brief. There we had messages or chats between, I believe it was an email, where a user had emailed somebody and said, hey, I might be interested in trading. Could you send me something? The defendant responded, what would you like? And then he sent something. And that was another example of an implied agreement where you, instead of this generalized posting and downloading, which is what wasn't enough in Halverson and what isn't enough in this case. And again, the guidelines commentary repeatedly emphasizes that it has to be with another person. The commission could have gone with the Fourth Circuit test in McManus when it amended the guideline. In McManus, the test had been that the defendant knowingly makes material in his possession available by some means with the specific purpose of receiving valuable consideration.
Well, it seems like the district court adopted the PSR.
Right.
The PSR says he entered various chat rooms which required him to submit child pornography images to receive additional child pornography images. Doesn't the PSR say that?
Yes.
If the PSR says that, and that was adopted by the district court, then we have to say that there was a requirement for him to submit child pornography images to receive additional.
Right, but there wasn't. And it's similar to Halverson in that there's this generalized posting and downloading that happens, but there isn't a specific agreement. We don't know how many people were in this chat room. We don't know that he was posting and somebody else downloaded that, and then he also was able to get, again, in the...
But if everyone's proceeding to the chat room under the same terms, I mean, couldn't that be the ground for an implied agreement among them all?
There has to be, under the text of the guidelines commentary, a specific agreement between people. Three times they say in that commentary definition it has to be with another person.
Am I remembering this right? Did he also exchange images and things via Facebook Messenger?
There's a line in the factual basis at the rearrangement where there's something about him using Facebook Messenger and doing exchange. In my view, that's an ambiguous statement. Under this court's decision in Lee, a district court clearly errs by relying on an ambiguous statement in the factual basis. In this case, Mr. Lopez, it was also extraneous. Mr. Lopez wasn't charged with distribution. He was charged with transportation.
Well, but I mean, the Facebook Messenger message would be to a specific person, would it not?
It could be. There just isn't really evidence about that in this case. It's not in the PSR. And the way that the line that the prosecutor read at the rearrangement is not specific enough. It's not like Jones where there's these chats where someone is initiating an exchange, or in Fusito where the defendant is initiating a specific person-to-person agreement between two people. And in Fusito, the court described it has to be that the distributor intended to receive from the same person that they're distributing to and not some third party. So when you have this chat room or this peer-to-peer network application, it's not from the same person. You might be able to, you know, you post but then and you're able to access downloads, but it's not this person-to-person back and forth quid pro quo agreement, which is what the commission decided was more culpable and deserving of the higher enhancement. And again, he does get the 2-level for knowing distribution. It's when there's this specific arrangement, this specific agreement that what the commission was after.
Well, it's not clear that the peer-to-peer file sharing networks conflict with the guideline commentary. I think that's an assumption that we haven't yet determined.
The court held in Halverson that the evidence was insufficient.
But that was a specific thing where the person said, I didn't give the test. There's specific testimony and findings in that case that make it different.
I don't think it's, my reading of that case isn't as specific, I think. It's that the agent testified that Halverson hadn't asked him for anything.
Yeah.
Halverson didn't say, I don't want anything from you. Halverson didn't make that request. And so that what was missing in that case was the specific agreement between two people or a person-to-person agreement, the quid pro quo.
You agree that it can be implicit?
Yes, it can be implicit. For example, in Pusido,
so that it's not at all clear that why do you believe that the law doesn't allow it in this context to be found by the district court on this record? I can you explain it one more time?
Sure. Yes. In this case, what we have is a generalized posting and downloading, and that is not a specific agreement that's required under the text of the guideline commentary.
Even when you know that on the posting and downloading that the site itself requires that.
The site requires posting to not get kicked out of the group.
Yes,
that's to be
in this terrible group, you must agree. That's part of being in the group.
Right. And I think what we have here is what, again, in the Fusido case, the court explained how the 2016 amendment clarified that the distributor must have sent the pornography with the intent that the receiver and not some third party give valuable consideration in return. And in Fusido, they had the messages from the defendant to what turned out to be an undercover agent where they were setting up this agreement. It was implied. The agent wasn't particularly responsive. It wasn't this like completely spelled out, you give this to me, I'll give this, you know, this is once I send it to you, send it back. So it was an example of an implied agreement, but there was this direct contact between people setting it up as a quid pro quo agreement instead of this generalized downloading, generalized posting that is not sufficient.
You know, I don't think they're going to sign a written explicit contract.
Right.
You know, so we can infer that you agreed to be on this and that's the terms. And then he must have implicitly agreed to exchange porn to remain in the chat room.
I would add that if the commission had wanted to make this easier and not emphasize this person-to-person agreement, they could have written a different test.
I don't think it says person-to-person in the way that wouldn't be people on a chat room. That's peer-to-peer on a chat room is good enough, isn't it?
No, and it's because it's similar to the peer-to-peer networking application that was in Halverson that was insufficient.
Okay, thank you. I think you've answered our question. I may quibble with you, but I think you've done a good job explaining, so.
And I would just add that the Fourth Circuit, I started to make this point already, but if I could just say it one more time, in McManus, the Fourth Circuit had adopted a test where it was the defendant knowingly made child pornography in his possession available to others by some means and did so for the specific purpose of obtaining something of valuable consideration. And in Morehouse, the Fourth Circuit explained that the commission's amendment didn't adopt that test. I think under that test, we would have the enhancement would apply. But instead, the commission went a different way and decided that there had to be this distribution to another person with a specific person purpose of obtaining valuable consideration from that other person with whom he traded, which is what this court had held in Halverson. And I have reserved some time for rebuttal if there are no further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Gagliardi.
May it please the court, Seth Gagliardi for the United States. The government concedes that the district court below did err in applying the enhancement for a pattern of sexual exploitation of a minor or sexual abuse of a minor. However, the government maintains the district court did not err in applying the enhancement for distribution of child pornography in exchange for valuable consideration. The proper remedy in this case is for this court to remand for a resentencing without specific instructions to the district court. As
why?
For the first issue, the enhancement.
Why?
Yeah, why does the government get a second bite at presenting the evidence to support the first enhancement?
Yeah, sure, I understand. And there's some there was some briefing, especially more briefing in the reply brief by Mr. Lopez, about chemical and metals. And chemical and metals is distinguishable, as was pointed out in the Hernandez case, which is 48 Fed 4th 367. It stated that chemical and metals is distinguishable. That case did not remand at all.
Is that a new case you're citing today?
No, Hernandez is in the Mr. Lopez's opening
okay,
brief
good.
And Mr. Lopez's reply brief, Your Honor. And Hernandez, even Mr. Lopez in his reply brief pointed out that chemical and metals is distinguished in Hernandez because chemical and metals was not a remand case. What they did in that case was modify the fine and restriction order and otherwise affirm the case. Further, Hernandez stated that there was a special circumstance in that case, and that was that the government's burden was unclear. For the basically the same reason that we are holding that we should be able to present additional evidence here, which is that Mr. Hernandez below did not object. So it was on plain error. And the court there stated that Hernandez ignored the fact that he previously seemed to take the same view that the government's burden had been met. That's the same situation we have here, where we're on plain error. Mr. Lopez did not object to whether or not we had met our burden below, and the parties below did believe we met our burden.
Aren't we getting kind of it backwards? It used to be that that was a real exception to allow the government to get a do-over. And that you had to have special circumstances under Villalobos and other cases like that. That used to be the presumption since the 18 years I've been on the court was that you would not get a do-over unless you had a reason. And now there's kind of we've had some change in that. Do you recognize that, or what do you
Judge Elrod, respectfully, I understand the confusion because there have been different opinions in this court discussing whether or not it was appropriate for at resentencing for there to be additional evidence admitted. We cited in our brief Romero, which stated it's 112 Fed 4th 309, which stated that the district court should reconsider any new evidence from either party relevant to the issues raised on appeal when a case is remanded for resentencing without specific instructions, which this court does regularly. And that was a citation or a quote from another case we cite in our brief, Corrales v. Alta, 617 Fed 3rd 342, which is a 2010 case. And one of the ways this court distinguished chemical and metals in the Hernandez case was stating that Corrales v. Alta was prior panel precedent. And to the degree that they conflicted at all, Corrales v. Alta was the dominant case which would be precedent. Additionally, there is, after the reply brief, I did look for additional cases. There is a case that I would draw your attention to that is not cited in our brief, just for educational purposes. It is unpublished. It's Lopez Cano, 516 Federal Appendix 350. It's a 2013 case. It is
did
unpublished.
You give this to
we did
them
not.
Before you came up here today?
What's that, Your Honor?
Did you give this to opposing counsel?
I did not, Your Honor.
Okay, well, that would
it discusses,
have been, if you thought you might be talking about it, that you brought the site with you, you might have given it to them ahead of argument.
I appreciate that, Your Honor. It collects
so
cases.
So I would give them 3 business days to file a 28J with that or a responsive case if they wish. Go ahead.
I understand that, Your Honor. And I should have done that, and I apologize, and I apologize to counsel. It collects cases, prior published cases, where it's and it specifically states, again, that chemical and metal is distinguishable and that this court takes a different approach to sentencing decisions based on the facts of prior convictions, routinely remanding for resentencing and allowing the government to supplement the record with charging documents to establish the challenge enhancement based on prior convictions.
Can we go through the factors that are outlined in the Villalobos case? Was the government's burden unclear here?
That was what Hernandez found in that case. And Hernandez
basically... So I'm asking you, in this case, was the government's burden unclear?
In this case, I would say our burden was unclear, and I'll explain why.
Okay, good.
Very similar to the Hernandez case. The Hernandez case said that the burden was unclear, government's burden was unclear, based on the fact that Mr. Hernandez had the same view and did not object below. I would point to the enhancement.
So what is the, I'm sorry, here, not in Mr. Hernandez's case.
I understand, Your Honor.
What is the number, so what's the government's burden unclear here?
There is no prior published opinion about this enhancement and its interaction with Texas Penal Code involved here, which is indecency with a child by sexual contact. We do point to an unpublished case called Assiter in our brief, which involved a prior version of the enhancement, which had more lenient language about which convictions would satisfy it.
Okay, what about number, the second factor? Did the trial court prohibit discussion of the issue?
No, Your Honor. It was not prohibited discussion.
Was the evidence for good reason unavailable?
It was unavailable at that time, and there is very good reason why the government, in a case like this, a child pornography case, and a prior conviction involving minor victims, would not make additional efforts, you know, in order not to re-victimize those minor victims, to come testify when offense reports or indictments or informations or complaints are not available. The option would be to call a minor victim. There's also...
Are you planning to do that on remand, if you get a do-over?
If we possibly can, Your Honor, yes.
You're going to do that?
If we need to and have to, we will, we will, Your Honor.
I thought that the records are unavailable, so you don't even know who
they are. Our information at the time was that the records were unavailable and we did not call a witness because
Is the information now available?
We believe information now may be available, Your Honor, and that is the risk that Mr. Lopez takes on plain error advancing his argument.
Okay.
It provides a perverse incentive also, Your Honor, not to allow the government to present additional evidence for a defendant to lay behind the log, wait for appeal, not object below, not put the government on additional notice that he's objecting to the enhancement, and then on appeal say, it's all over, you can't supplement, you can't go back. It just provides a perverse incentive for the defense to lay behind the log on these issues.
Do you have anything else on that point, or do you want to move to distribution enhancement?
We can move to the distribution enhancement, Your Honor, and Your Honor is correct to distinguish Halverson in this case. The district court did not err in applying the distribution in exchange for valuable consideration because it is significantly different than the Halverson. The Halverson case, as Your Honor pointed out, involved a specific admission by the agent in that case that there was no exchange, there was no interaction, and it involved a peer-to-peer network. These chat rooms that Mr. Lopez was involved in are very different than the peer-to-peer networks. They involve a direct distribution into the chat room, not only to access that chat room, but then to gain the child pornography that's available in that chat room from other individuals. As Your Honor pointed out, the agreement can be implicit, as this court stated in Fusito, and as Your Honor, on a recent decision, Howe, which followed Fusito, also recognized that it can be an implicit agreement. The involvement in these chat rooms, as noticed in the PSR in the record at ROA 581, PSR paragraphs 21 through 24, is that Mr. Lopez distributed child pornography to gain access to these chat rooms and to trade child pornography in these chat rooms. Although there is no direct explicit evidence in this case, as Your Honor pointed out, that is not required. There can be circumstantial and implicit evidence, and it can be inferred from the information on the PSR, which was not contested and was not rebutted by testimony by Mr. Lopez.
And I think I heard Ms. Shepherd acknowledge that it can be implicit.
Yes, Your Honor. I heard that as well. And while acknowledging that it can be implicit, it seems that Mr. Lopez's briefing both below and his objections below and his argument in the briefing is that there has to be more direct evidence of an agreement. That's what I understand. I understand that they have to acknowledge that it can be an implicit agreement, but they seem to be asking for more. And I think it's important to point out that this is a factual finding reviewed for clear error.
But I think she used the language that she says there's no evidence of a specific agreement. I'm not sure what the word specific means, but but it can be implicit, but it has to be specifically implicit, I guess.
I'm not sure either, Your Honor, because I don't think that additional language and that higher burden is in the enhancement. And the Amendment 801 in 2016 to this enhancement was meant to hold people accountable for the higher mental culpability for distributing so they could get valuable consideration. It's important to recognize that valuable consideration is not only child pornography, but preferential access to child pornography. And one of the things these chat rooms permit is preferential access to this environment where child pornography is traded. And it very specifically in the PSR states that Mr. Lopez had to submit child pornography in order to gain access to these chat rooms.
So that's a factual finding the district court adopted.
Yes, Your Honor.
So we can't look behind that at this stage.
No, Your Honor.
Unless it was clear error, and there's not evidence that that's clear error.
And the standard, Your Honor, is that as long as it is plausible in light of the record as a whole, that this court will affirm, this court will not overturn that factual finding unless it's left with the definite and firm conviction that a mistake has been made.
Can you address this? I understand Ms. Shepherd to be arguing with her argument about specific versus it can be implied but also specific, that the specific refers to a specific person.
Specific individual.
It's not a specific agreement that's spelled out, but it's a specific person. And that really that we would run afoul of the commentary. Can you address specific individual? Can you address that point specifically?
I can, Your Honor, absolutely. And Fusito made clear that the agreement has to be for an exchange from an individual, not a third party, not an expectation that some third party will provide to you. And that's where I think Judge Wilson's observation comes in as far as the Facebook Messenger exchange that's admitted at the rearrangement. And that's ROA 111 to 113. Mr. Lopez acknowledges that factual basis was accurate. And one of the things that factual basis states is that it was his email connected to the Facebook Messenger that was used to exchange child pornography. And that the Facebook Messenger is a direct messaging app. That is an exchange that he's acknowledging in the rearrangement hearing in the factual basis that there was an exchange. Additionally, the individuals controlling access to this chat room are a person, are some person that requires him to submit child pornography to gain access to the chat room. That's a reasonable inference from the PSR, which the district court is allowed to make.
Could it be a bot?
Even if it's a bot, Your Honor, somebody programmed that bot to demand that he submit in order to gain access. So even if it is a bot, somebody is behind that bot. Demanding the distribution.
And so that would comply with the commentary.
Yes, Your Honor. That would comply with the commentary. And as far as the admission at the rearrangement that he did exchange through Facebook Messenger, I know that Mr. Lopez has brought up the Lee case, which was Judge Wilson's case, as far as whether that's ambiguous. I'll just first state that I don't think that there's any ambiguity in that statement in the factual basis at the rearrangement. I think it's very clear that he says it's his email connected to the Facebook Messenger app that's used to exchange. Now, the issue in the Lee case was an enhancement for was for maintaining a drug premises. And the rearrangement had language that varied between whether or not Mr. Lee used or maintained a drug premises. And Judge Wilson found that the record was devoid, other than this rearrangement hearing, of any real substantive evidence that Mr. Lee was the one maintaining the drug residence. Rather, it was a co-defendant or another defendant that maintained, while Mr. Lee, the evidence was that Mr. Lee was one of the people that used it. So that was the ambiguity in that case, and there is no such ambiguity in this case.
Thank you. Do you have anything else?
For these reasons, the government would ask that this court remand for resentencing based solely on the pattern enhancement and allow the government to admit additional evidence.
Thank you. Ms. Shepherd, you saved time for rebuttal.
With the remand issue, the government has conflated two distinct questions. In Romero and Corrales-Villaralta, the question was, what does the mandate mean? from this court's previous decision, and the question before this court in this case is what should the mandate say? So Romero does not help the government's argument because in that case, when the court did remand without specific instructions, the district court acted within its discretion to take new evidence. But here, it's come up on appeal what the mandate should say and whether the court should remand for additional evidence or remand for resentencing under the lower guidelines range. And that's where Chemical Metal comes in, and Villalobos, where the court laid out these factors and the government hasn't satisfied those factors. It didn't even raise the factors in its brief and has instead made those arguments for the first time here at oral argument. In Chemical and Metal, also, the government tried to argue that plain error was a special circumstance justifying remand for additional evidence, and the court rejected that argument and held that that did not qualify as a special circumstance. When it's plain error, then we have to go through all four prongs of plain error to get the remand, and the government has conceded in this case that all four prongs are met.
So Mr. Gagliardi points out that Chemical and Metal is distinguishable in his view because there was no remand there. And he refers to the Hernandez discussion of Chemical and Metals.
Right. And again, with Romero and Hernandez as well, it's the issue of what did the mandate mean, not what should the mandate say. And that's how that case is distinguishable. But in Chemical and Metal, the government was trying to have the court issue a mandate that said we get another try. And that's what they're trying to do in this case. So that's the case that's on point. And the government's burden was clear. It always has the burden to prove by preponderance when there's enhancements involved, and that's what was in this case. And again, there's no reasonable dispute that, as far as the second prong of plain error, that the government failed to meet its burden in this case. The government was not prevented in any way by the district court from presenting new evidence, and they haven't offered a good reason as to why the evidence was previously unavailable. Again, the prior conviction involved a 19-year-old case, and the government's burden was clear. It also hasn't tried to supplement the record on appeal, which it does do in some cases when it has other evidence to present. And as far as the new case, I'm not familiar with that case, so I will take the court up on the offer to file a 28J within 3 days to address that case. So that's all I have. If we would ask the court for those reasons to remand for resentencing without allowing the government to present new evidence.
Thank you. We have your argument. We appreciate both arguments in this case today, and it's submitted. The next case for today.